I'm Scott Hansen with NFL Red Zone, and you are listening to the Gridiron Gentlemen.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Gridiron Gentlemen podcast, delving into our draft. We had a sickness last week on the IR, was James, so we skipped an episode, but we'll catch up. Luckily next week's is a position that's not many players, so we're going to double up next week and we'll catch up.
Yeah.
This week's, on the other hand, there's a lot of players, so we'll delve into what a kind of process for that is. But as you kind of heard from the background, joining me tonight, as always, is James. How are you, James?
I'm doing great, actually. This is going to be a really, really good class to talk about.
Yeah. This, I think, probably my favourite class, like positional group. Definitely the deepest. Probably my favourite. Wide receiver. This and wide receiver, I think, are the two best. But wide receiver, I think, is always getting good, so it's kind of less exciting having a good wide receiver class. That's just as the norm now. But this edge class is ridiculous. Because it is so deep, we were both kind of talking about, after my top 50, and I've got 9 edge players in it, James thinks he's probably something similar. Top 2 rounds, I think you could end up having 15, 16 guys go in the top 2 rounds, depending on how the boards start falling. We could be here for 4 hours if we did that. So what we're going to do is we've both got our top 10. We'll break down our kind of 10 through 6 really, really quickly. Just kind of 20 seconds each guy each. And then we'll go into a bit more detail on the top 5. If there's something we've got a bit wild that we have a real outlier, we can go in a bit more detail on that. But just to kind of keep it not a 4-hour podcast on one position, I think that's the best way we're going to do it. We sort of spoke about that before the draft, before we start to record them. Yes, as much as it doesn't seem like it, we do some sort of planning here, guys. But without further ado, because this is going to be a deep class, we'll get started. I'll let you go first, I guess, James, with your number 10.
So 10, I had Michigan's Derek Moore, 6'3", 260. Slightly smaller edge guy. Wins more with quickness. I think he's not necessarily a fully rounded pass rusher who could play with his hand in the dirt, but definitely as a 3-4 outside linebacker, he could give you something as a situational pass rush. And he's a day two guy with some limitations, but he nudged into the top 10 just ahead of the guy I had at 11, who was Joshua Joseph of Tennessee.
Didn't make my top 10, but again, that kind of shows the depth of the class. There could be a bit of difference between that. I struggled really from like 8 to 18. But my number 10 was Cassius Howell, Texas A&M. He's 4'5", 40, 32.5-inch vertical, broad jump 9'7". He's played, he redshirted in 2021, so he's been at Texas A&M quite a while, but he did play in 2021, played 4 games, that's where I like to play without redshirting. Then he played all 13 games in 2022, all 13 games 2023, all 13 games 2024, and all games in 2025, and was first team All-American, and he was SEC Defensive Player of the Year, and first team All-SEC. He's bendy, and he gets sacks. He's got a high sack total. He's got a burst and elusiveness, but he's probably not cohesive, and his hands aren't great. I think that holds him back a bit, but he's kind of explosive. And I think, I'd like to think NFL teams can get the hands up a bit. I think that's a technique thing, which you can improve on. I don't think you can teach the explosiveness. But yeah, let's not go too deep into these guys, like we said. So that's kind of a quick breakdown there.
The other thing that really took me down on him was just the size as well. He has the measurables, like 0th percentile arms for edge rushers at all time. And just the fact that he does one thing, and he does that one thing with pure explosiveness, and that's part rushing the passer. But when explosiveness doesn't work, there's nothing else to lean into. I'm much lower in him than most people.
Yeah. I think early is going to be a lot of... That's kind of comes back to your DT speak, though. I look at top end and I just like guys that make plays. I think if you're going to take a guy in the second, if a situational pass rusher that can get you sacks is, for me, worth it in the second.
Yeah.
But I can see the weaknesses. Your number nine?
So my number nine was Cassius Hell.
Oh, right. Fair. Yeah. So that works. Yeah.
So we see him similarly.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were saying what held you back on him, as in you didn't have him in your top 10.
Well, there are some people who have him as high as edge 4.
Yeah.
Or edge 5.
Which I think
you know, just because, yeah.
Too rich for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Bit rich for me.
Rich. So I've got next Zion Young, then's my number 9. Edge at Missouri.
I have Zion Young at 7, so we are. Yeah, we're not far off each other.
No. What I actually like about him is he was a 3-star recruit that turned into an elite player at college, which doesn't happen often. What held Cassius Hill back, I'm guessing, is what pushes Zion Young up. He is a monster. Yeah. He looks like he's been built in a lab to play edge in the NFL. He's 6'5", 262, in long arms. Like, they're just solid tools that a coach thinks they can mend to his will. He began his career at Michigan State, and he played in 8 games as a true freshman at Michigan State, which kind of shows that he's always been a bit of a physical freak.
Yeah.
Started every game in 2024, collected 42 tackles, 5.5 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, 3 passes defended, forced a fumble, even from returned a fumble for a touchdown, which is always nice for a big guy. I think his production's not quite as high, and he's not quite got the explosiveness, but he looks like he's built to play edge in the NFL.
Yeah, and he's a fantastic run defender, which counts for so much.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you really want a guy to play a lot.
Yeah,
exactly. You're kind of out and out. Edge rushers are going to come in on third down, but you can play him for 3 downs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like, you know, if it is you're at pick 50 or 60 and what you really, really want is a guy on the edge who can situationally play on first down and be that guy that can set the edge and give you a bit of pass rush juice, not much, but a bit, that's a good place to start. And it's the kind of player profile that gets on a team and sticks around for a while because he's just so stout against the run. He's the Diet Coke version of another player we'll talk about a bit later.
I wonder who. So that's your number 7, was my number 9. So who's your number 8?
It was Malachi Lawrence of UCLA.
Malachi Lawrence. So that's my number 6.
Yeah, we've kind of tiered them the same, but within those tiers, there's subtle differences. Yeah. So with Malachi Lawrence, it was like, the splash plays I completely see, and it's like, while he is probably a stand-up pass rusher only, there are enough flashes in his play to say that every once in a while he could be a guy that will get you 8 to 10 sacks. It's not like he will do it consistently, but if he's part of a good pass rush rotation on a good defense, he can be one of those players. I just question whether he will consistently have sack production throughout his career. Even though he had one of the better pass rush win rates among the class this season with 19.2%, which for a collegiate player is excellent, but he still only generated 40 pressures and 7 sacks off of that. So, you know, he wins, but how much he affects the quarterback is still relatively limited, even though he's clearly capable of splash plays with his...
Generally as well, that drops in the NFL as well, because the quarterback tends to be better to get him out of it. So if you can't finish it in college, you could struggle at the next level to finish it big time. Like, how many times you see Mahomes and you're like, he's wrapped up and then he's gone? Like, it happens a lot.
Yeah.
Right, we're on my number 8 now. Yeah. Gabe Jacobs.
I have 6.
You have 6. Right, yeah.
I had him at six. Yeah.
Now, there's a lot saying he might actually be an out-and-out linebacker at the next level. And there's that debate with another guy I think we'll speak about later on.
Yeah.
It's weird. Without spoiling the later guys, so I don't know whether to say I agree that I think they're the same or not. But I see Jacobs as more of an edge than I do as a linebacker. But, meh. I think he could be a bit playing whatever he needs to get on the field at times. But again, he's 6'4", he's 260. He had a 30 bench. which is 96th percentile for edge rushers.
Yeah,
and they tend to be higher than linebackers because they tend to be bigger. So the fact he's 96th percentile at edge when he's a kind of edge linebacker hybrid is a bit wild. But yeah,
I found him fascinating, and he very nearly got. He was very nearly my edge five. It was really close because what I really liked about him, you know how sometimes players that play two positions, you often have to ask yourself a question, are they tweeners or are they just homeless?
Yeah.
By the way, surname, apparently the J is silent. It's Akkus. It's weird. Oh. It's Gabe Akkus. So yeah, it's really, really weird. The J is silent. I mean, I don't understand. But yeah. It's through me as well. Because I kept thinking, where's Akkus on here? And then I looked into his profile and it's silent, apparently. He probably made it silent to avoid people calling him jackass. But yeah. would you call anybody who's 260 pounds and 6'4 a jackass? No, you wouldn't.
Certainly not these days.
Because it's weird, because there are probably three players in this class, and he's the first one of them that you could conceivably have play as a stand-up 3-4 and rush the passer, but also put their hand in the dirt as a 3-4 defensive end because of their size and their strength and how good they are at playing in both phases. He's a really clever player as well. He's a smart, intelligent player. He sometimes can... He gets a bit guessy occasionally, but he clearly knows what's going on in front of him. It's just about whether he is enough of an athlete to be a really good player, but he's somebody who you can kind of get good reps at a 7 or a 5 or a 4 tech. And well, I think that has value.
Yeah, he's an ex-wrestler, and I think you can see that in his hands.
Yeah, you can see that.
I think the ex-wrestlers tend to be very, very good at the point of contact using their hands. His production is really good. But again, I think a lot of that was with hands more than athleticism, which you tend to need both at the next level to be elite.
Yeah.
Because every week you're going up against the best. So again, you never really know how it's going to translate, but 2025, you had 13.5 tackles for loss with 7 sacks, 11 sacks. So you had 24.5 tackles behind the line of scrimmage. Like,
it counts for something.
Yeah, and it was at Illinois, which, good team. They're not elite. They're not always playing with the lead. You're playing with the lead, you get tackles for, you get a lot of sacks. Doing that at Illinois says a lot, because the other teams don't always be thrown. But yeah, so we've mentioned your number 7 already, haven't we?
Yes.
Yep.
Six. Now you mentioned my 6.
Mentioned 6. So who's your 7, sorry?
So my 7, you already had Zion Young, didn't you?
Yeah. Mate, so, Zion Young. Yeah.
So I had TJ Parker of Clemson.
Ah,
so
right, he's my 6.
So it's like, yeah, we're almost in lockstep in terms of tiers. So there's doing no sort of tier breach here. So and TJ Parker, it's like,
I feel like the top 3 is going to be a tier of its own, and it'll just be how we grade the top 3 as well.
Yeah, probably top it's 4 5, or 5. Where they might, I think we're going to have the same 5.
Yeah.
We'll have the same five. It's just the order. TJ Parker. So it's kind of like with TJ Parker, he's pretty well rounded. He's a good pass rusher. He's a good run defender, but there's not one single trait about him that is exceptional. It's just, it's good. It can sometimes be underwhelming. He occasionally can disappear. He doesn't play particularly well against some of the better tackles. He isn't particularly overly explosive. He's explosive enough to hold and is strong enough. It's kind of like he's a 6.5, 7 at everything. And because of that, I think he will always be part of a rotation. I mean, there's potentially some meat on the bone for him to sort of improve a bit. He is 21 years old, so there's always that potential that he will be better. And he wasn't quite as good this year as he was last year. But we've not seen an exponential improvement in explosiveness or athleticism. And I think, where do I see him maxing out? I see him maxing out as a guy who will get you maybe 8, 9 sacks. I think the ceiling for him is someone like Elia Tulatu, who is a good pass rusher, but isn't quite in that kind of top two tiers, as it were. But I would say that if you are after pass rush, you're after a guy who can be a solid three or a really solid three or a fairly good two, then, you know, between picks, I don't know, 35 and 60, he's absolutely fine for this particular class. In other classes, I think he'd go lower, but in the context of this class, he's potentially an early day two, mid day two pick.
Out of interest, do you not think this is a similar sort of conversation we're going to be having about a lot of Clemson players?
Yeah.
Good.
And it's yeah.
Productive. But man, they don't really excite you anything.
They don't, no.
And it just seems like Clemson, what Clemson have been under for the last few years. That's a different conversation and we've got enough guys to go and talk about. But I just feel like that seems to be what Clemson are just now and they need a bit of a freshening up, I think. But
I think so.
Yeah. Right. So my number six we spoke about. Yeah, I think we're now in the top five.
We are in the five. Who's your right. five?
My five, I feel like my four and five are interchangeable. And my one, two, three are interchangeable, but I do have the order. At five I've went Keldrick Falk.
At five, I went Messidor.
Right. And have you went Falk at four?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've been Messidor at four. Yeah. Right. What way do you want to go? Who do I talk about first?
Let's do Messidor.
Messidor. Right. My biggest concern with Messidor is who he was lined up across from. It's very hard to know how much of his production relied so much in that. For what it's worth, everybody's not tuning in. We will be speaking about his edge partner in about 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Yeah,
about that. So, I always struggle when you get two guys at that level. It's the same with Ohio State defense just now. I'm like, how much of the performance is reliant on the fact they're playing with a bunch of guys that are going to go on Sundays when they're against a bunch of guys might have two Sunday players on the full team? But his quickness and athleticism, as well as an excellent use of hands, he just constantly jumps off the screen. At times I felt he jumped off the screen even more than his teammate. Again, we'll get into him in a minute. But he's maybe a bit small against the run, which I think holds him back from being one of the top guys. He has 265, but he's only quote-unquote 6'3". Sometimes that should be better than it is because you can get leverage if you've still got the weight. But I don't know. I just feel sometimes at third against the run, he seemed a bit weak. But, I mean, 70 tackles, 14 and a half tackles, 70 tackles, 14 and a half tackles for loss and 9.5 sacks in 23 games. You can't really argue with it. That was his early. Then in 2024, he bounced back with 23 tackles, 9 tackles for loss, 5.5 sacks. His final season, 56 tackles, 15.5 tackles for loss, and 10.5 sacks. And what I really liked is 4 forced fumbles.
Yeah.
He's a playmaker, which I think is somebody who's watched Jets defences have a lot of good players, but none that make plays. You need a playmaker. And yes, that's what he is. But how much of that is the fact teams weren't able to double team him? He also played on a Miami team that were ahead a lot this year, which did allow him to just kind of pin his ears back and go. But yeah, I liked him. I don't know. That concern dropped a bit below Falk, but again, it was splitting hairs between those two, really. I could have went either way. And I think if you asked me in 2 days' time, I might switch. It's that kind of thing.
So, for me with Mesidor, it's, if I look at, there's 6 years of college production.
Yeah, he turned 25 on Sunday.
Exactly.
He's old.
This is the other part of the problem. We have 6 years of production. And so in his age 24, going into his age 25 season, it's the first time we've seen him produce at a level that would be what we would consider to be a borderline first round kind of production. So he does play in a lot of situations that are quite favourable. And it is because of Reuben Bain. So, for example, they spend a fair bit of time in what they call an underfront, whereby you will have three players to one side of a formation, and then you will have an isolated edge defender out the weak side. Now, normally the isolated edge defender on the weak side is Reuben Bain. And it's almost like they're daring teams to run at Reuben Bain. But what you find is that there's more immediate help adjacent to Mesidor to eat blocks, meaning that he gets more meaningful one-on-ones. And also, he's generally playing on the right side against the team's second-best tackle. But you can only beat who's in front of you. And he did, in the regular season, he accumulated 9 sacks, and including postseason, it's 10.5. He had a 21% pass rush win rate, which is really, really good. That's very, very good indeed. And I think the level of athleticism is good. But that's the problem. It's good, and he's 25. So if Hakeem Mesidor was 21, I'd be like, upside. This is a player who I can say, well, oh, this is, it's like pick 20, 25. He's 21. He's already this good. Let's see what we can do with this, because there could be some more meat on the bone. Teams are going to have to understand that what they're drafting right now is probably, he's probably very close to his ceiling as an athlete and as a player.
Even if it's not, right, he's 25 by the time the season starts. He's going to go in the first, he's going to go late first, which means there's going to be a fifth-year option. By the time he hits his second contract, he's 30.
So it's that trade-off. But he is a polished player.
Yeah, well,
he's just a polished player with limited upside. Yeah,
he should be at 25.
Yeah, so there is that aspect of it. There is almost a kind of set it and forget it. But I think any higher than like 30 is just a little bit rich for a player like that, because you already know that he's probably maxed out at this point.
Yeah.
And so there is very little upside to be had. And what there is probably in the pros is a guy who, again, is probably a fairly good number two pass rusher, which in this class, you could take a chance on a Cassius Howell to be that guy if he's there later, or you could take a chance on a Zion Young, who's a better run defender. I don't know. You just, it's like Mesidor is an interesting player. It depends on whether teams want to bank on that first contract, him being immediately successful and productive.
Yeah. I think you need to, if you're taking him, you need to be willing to deal with this is what he is. You're not going to be drafted, you're not going to be coaching him up. He's not going to suddenly delve in skills he's not currently got, maturity he's not currently got. He is what he is, which is why I kind of held him back below Falk. But I think currently, if you told me who's going to have a better rookie year, I'd say Mesidor.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I would say so too, because he's spent 2 years with Jason Taylor, and the difference that Jason Taylor has made to him and his pass rush teammate, who we will be talking about later,
is
exceptional. They are both so buttoned up. They're so buttoned up. They're so good. They're so technically sound and proficient. They're always where they are. They're always kind of where they're supposed to be, doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they just feel like players who are ready. And the fact that he's potentially maxed out is probably because Jason Taylor has coached him. He's probably got every single piece of athleticism and physical ability out of him he can, which is why he probably looks like someone who you could drop in straight away and he could be a contributor.
Yeah.
And that is a string to their bow, I think. So him and his teammate will come into the NFL with enough preparation from a truly great Hall of Fame pass rusher as their coach, enough preparation for them to hit the ground running and be immediately productive. So it's fine. If you're like picking early second round and he's there and you need pass rush help, you go do it. You just understand that second contract, it might not be what you think.
Now, the reverse, my fourth, your fifth. Keldrick Falk.
Oh. Now,
I'm guessing that he was your fifth, wasn't he? I've not made that up. We did speak that.
He was my fourth. So, because I sifted all of these players and I went back and forth on my top.
I thought I'd messed up five and Falk four and you were vice versa.
No.
Oh, jeez, right, okay.
I'm glad we're the same. We both had Mesidor at five, didn't we?
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought you were the opposite.
The concern with Falk for a lot of people is his last year production. He basically dropped production across the board. So if you compare 2024 to 2025, 45 tackles to 29, 30, 23, solo, that is, assists dropped from 15 to 6, sacks went from 7 to 2, just consistent across the board production drop. However, they decided to line them up everywhere.
Yeah, there's a reason.
What's weird is, he's, we spoke about the bench earlier, do you know what his bench grading was?
No.
Bottom 10 percentile.
Okay.
Which, for a guy who gets lined up in the middle at times, kind of confused me. Usually you're putting strong guys in the middle. Auburn were just a bit of a basket case, really. He's 6'6".
That doesn't really tally for Fort, because when I watch him play, I don't think of him as a not strong player.
So you got who was it we mentioned earlier? Was it that had top? He had 30, right? Falk had 17, like half basically. But he's 6'6", he's 276, not massive hands, 50th percentile, but his wingspan is 94th percentile.
Yeah.
So he's long. He's 4.67's decent. No complaints there. He's 10 yards is slow though. Bottom 33%. But I don't know. I just feel like when you watch the tape, he's better than the output. Partly that was he was lined up everywhere. Partly that was Auburn were terrible, so they were never ahead. So you don't really get the chance to rush the passer.
So it's really interesting that you mentioned his snaps by position. Very interesting.
Have you got the break there?
I've got the full breakdown. So he played a total of 552 snaps.
Huh?
So he played 26 snaps at defensive tackle on the left side, 22 snaps at defensive tackle on the right side, 84 snaps at left defensive end, 91 snaps at left outside linebacker, 71 snaps at right outside linebacker, 4 snaps at nose tackle. He played 76 snaps at right defensive end, and he played 161 snaps at right outside linebacker. He was everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And it was situational.
Yeah, what it was, this is what annoyed me when I was watching it. I watched a lot of Auburn. I'm an SEC guy. I watch a lot of SEC.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't just move him around to be against the opponent's weak point. They just moved him around. It wasn't like, oh, that right guard's weak, let's put him there. And it makes it really difficult because you can't get into a rhythm of your pass rush technique. People think that it's just pinning your ear back and going no matter where you are. It's a completely different game rushing the passer from left outside linebacker to right DT, especially Jesus. But he never really got into a rhythm. It wasn't even like this week he's doing this and next week he's doing that. I don't know if you're saying you found a rhythm to it. I didn't find a rhythm. But
it was situational. Yeah. It was mostly based on how much teams ran. This is the thing, okay? The best run defender on that defense is Keldrick Fork.
Yep.
The man is probably... There's only two players in this edge class that can eat double teams. And we'll get to the other one in a little bit. But Keldrick Fork is actually capable as an interior defensive lineman of eating double teams in the run game. He's also capable of being a gap shooter in the run game. As an edge player, he is exceptionally good at setting an edge. He's very, very powerful and strong. He's very, very rarely out of position. He's a very solid tackler. He is, to all intents and purposes, in terms of run defense, the best run defender in this entire D-line and edge class, save for Caden McDonald. He is like, and the fact is, right, that he's played at almost every position along the D-line and a couple of slots at linebacker positions in various formations. And he's never looked like any one of those spots was beyond him.
Mm-hmm.
Think about a player who gives you value in the run game anywhere on the line, but also, while he doesn't have exceptional pass rush ability, has enough pass rush ability that every once in a while he'll get you 8 to 10 sacks a season. If you think about that, even if he only gets 5 or 6 a year, but he is the best run defender on your team, and he can play at edge, or you can move into 3-tech, or in, you know, certain situations have him play, you know, right inside as a 3-tech, you know, that's so valuable.
Dude, it's also
a big plus. Good player at that. That's so valuable too.
Dude, also it's a big plus. See, if you're a GM, there's a newer GM, and you don't know about the coaching staff, or you're a head coach that's offensive-driven, and you don't know about your DC that much, you don't need to worry about scheme fit.
Not really, no.
Like, or if you know you're a DC, and you don't, but generally if your DC is strong, you get for the scheme fit anyway. But how often have you then, do you see teams drafting a guy, and then they totally change their defensive scheme, and it just doesn't fit the new system? Don't they worry about that? You didn't line them up at a different setup.
No.
It's a big, big plus, especially teams picking at the top of the draft generally are bad teams that coaches on hot seats. Now, I don't think he's going to go that high, but it's an interesting, it's a very nice positive. But yeah, I do think he did his draft profile, his draft stock, no harm with the amount of moving he's did. Too often you just look at the output, and you'd like to think teams do more studying than that, but
Every single draft analyst I've read and every single coach or whoever is asked about Keldrick Faulks says the same thing. He is an excellent run defender.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Like, the run defender is a first round grade. It's like not quite Khalil Mack as a prospect, but probably a tick below that kind of run defender. And that means his floor is great, but he's got the opposite problem that Mesudor has. Keldrick Faulk will not be 21 on day one of the season.
Is he that young?
He'll be 21 in October.
Yeah, he's still got some growing to do. Probably
a very young player, and he is 6'6". He's 285, and he is the kind of build where he can either put 10 on or drop 20.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Depending
so
on how
I
you want
think
to play.
He's the kind of player, I don't think you pick it top 15, but you're like, if you're sat there after 15 and you're like, this is the kind of developmental player you want, someone who is already a very good run defender with a lot of room to improve and a lot of potential for growth, who just needs a little bit more in terms of development as a pass rusher. You
just
take the floor of the
consistency
excellent
as well.
Run defender.
We
yeah,
need
but
some
you take the floor
as well.
And bank on some kind of growth. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Top three.
Yes, top three.
Now, I've still got one query on my top three. And I'll explain it.
Okay.
There's one guy that is like someone we spoke about earlier, and that they're still querying where he's going to line up.
I'm counting him in the top three.
Yes. Oh, no, he's definitely in my top three. My query is, I've got him as an overall prospect as a higher than the other two.
Yes. Yes.
As a pure edge rusher, I've got him lower than the other two.
As a pure edge rusher, spoiler alert, I don't have him one.
Yeah, right. So, similar. I've got him three, but you may have him two, right? That's fine. Are we grading him here as a pure edge rusher?
If I was to grade him as a pure edge rusher, I think it would be... I'm grading him as a pure edge rusher.
Right, that's fine. That's fine. Just so I know where I'm putting him right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a crisis this week in the last 7 days while I was sick, and I watched a lot of pass rush snaps of number two and number three.
Yep.
And I came to a fairly monumentous decision.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do we just release all three just now then in order? Because everyone knows who they are. It just means we both know where we're sitting in. Right.
Yeah.
As a pure edge rusher, I'm going Bailey Bain Reese.
Ah.
Reese is my number three overall player, and he's who I want the Jets to take number two. But as a pure edge rusher, I've got the other two guys ahead of him.
So you've gone Reese at three?
Yes. From a pure edge. Out of everyone we spoke about, he's the best player here.
I would say that.
But,
which is why I went at three. And this is the crisis I had. At three, I went Bailey.
Right, okay. There.
Yeah, your face says it all. You did a little, your face wrinkled just for a split second there. And I will explain.
It's fine. Cause I just remember we spoke a lot about these guys because... Especially around combine time. But no, that's fine. So Bailey three, guessing Reese two there.
I just wish I could have two ones. Reese just about too.
Yeah.
Only just. But as an overall player, he's better than both of them.
Yeah.
It's just whether, yeah. But as a pure overall edge player, at the moment.
Here's a question for you, right? This isn't an edge question, just a general question. How many elite prospects are there for you in this draft for their position?
Caleb Downs.
Yep. I've got Jeremiah two. That's Love. All I've got.
I've got Caleb Downs, Jeremiah Love.
Yep. Yep.
Arvil Reese.
So whether you have him as
Sonny Styles, Sonny Styles and Ruben Bain. I've got five.
Right, okay. Fair. See, I've only got two. I've only got two that I think are elite for their position as prospects. Mm. But neither of them I'd take that high because I don't think their positional value is there. It's an interesting one this year. But, right, okay, so you've went Bain 1A, basically, Reese 1B, Bailey 3.
Yes.
Right, okay. Now, you were quite high on Bailey for a long time.
Yeah.
I should, right?
I am still high on Bailey.
Being number 3, you're still strong on Bailey. Right, that's...
Still strong.
Yeah,
I'm still strong. There's not a massive gap.
Did you raise the other two, or did you drop him down a bit out of interest?
I dropped Bailey for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
So, I want to start with the positives of David Bailey.
On you go.
And this is an awful thing to say. He's got the fastest get-off of any player in this draft process.
Yeah.
The fastest first step of anybody on the D-line.
Mm-hmm.
Edge or D tackle, just ridiculously explosive off the ball, like almost Von Miller. It's remarkable how quickly he gets off and he gets up into the tackle pads. He's got really good bend, and he has really, and just the best thing is his closing speed around the corner. So on plays where most guys will get round the corner and beat the tackle but don't quite get there, he just finds a way to just get there. And it's like, it was very reminiscent of Yannick Ngakoue.
Okay.
The way that Yannick Ngakoue always seemed to just get there, just in time. And I think that was really something that jumped off the page with him. And I looked at 6'3", and I looked at 250, and I looked at the frame, and I was like, as a pure pass rusher, he's ahead of Reese.
Yeah.
He is stylistically very different from Ruben Bain, but in terms of his raw athletic ability as a pass rusher, the natural aspect of it, he is exceptional at all the things that are rare. So that's bend, first step explosiveness, and closing speed are all things that you find very rarely all at once in one player.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do still value that very highly. And that is why he is absolutely three with a bullet. As a pure pass rusher, I think he is already good enough to hang in there at the NFL level, even if he is not as detailed and not as great with counter moves as you would like. The problem I have with David Bailey, there's two problems. One, I initially only watched 5 games. I watched 12 games of David Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
The problems that show up are this. One, against the run, he guesses. And he has some reps where he just gets washed down the line, or he makes the wrong decision, or he just doesn't hold up against power, or a tackle has him on skates and moves him out of the play. And there's too many reps of that for me to have that much faith in him early as a run defender. And the thing about not being a great run defender like that, it's harder to get really, really good at being a run defender than it when you move to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to get better at defending the run in college, become a better run defender before you hit the NFL. Because what happens is when you don't do that, you end up being Trey Hendrickson. Now, Trey Hendrickson is an elite pass rusher.
Yep.
But the thing about Trey Hendrickson is every team will tell you that when they put, you're right. You're right. You hurt yourself, sorry.
No, I just got the back.
No, it's fine. Is that when teams play the Bengals and they want to run the ball, they'll run it at Trey Hendrickson because he is almost a borderline liability as a run defender.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the issue with Bailey. He doesn't hold up against the run. The other thing that scared me a little bit, I watched his reps against a tackle prospect we're going to talk about. A tackle prospect that I'm really rather high on, but I watched his reps against Max Ihiaja. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa State shut him down. Absolutely shut him down. And it was because Ihiaja has really quick feet, really, really good, solid anchor into the ground, and is really quick with his hands. Really fundamentally sound and powerful in his lower body. And he just found a way to get to the spot as fast as Bailey, get hands on Bailey, and stonewall the guy. My other concern is that Bailey's frame, 6'3", 250, it's a 6'3", 250, but doesn't look like it can get much bigger. He's a lanky, skinny guy who is 250 max, whereas like guys like Keldrick Fork, who are at 280, are not maxed. And I just have concerns that David Bailey, the ceiling for him, isn't Von Miller. I think the ceiling for David Bailey is Trey Hendrickson.
Okay.
Which is great, you know? And actually, if you redrafted and you knew what Trey Hendrickson would be, you'd take him one overall. It's just the ceiling for him is that. But I think the floor is, you know, Diet Coke Nick Benito. Nick Benito is a good player. Again, yeah. Nick Benito, you're going to run at Nick Benito, okay? But I think that, and the worst case scenario is that Bailey ends up being a situational pass rusher if he doesn't pan out. And I think that would be a shame because there is a potential for him to be Yannick Ngakoue, which is, you know, a guy who regularly gets, somehow, gets 12, 13 sacks a year, but we're not going to have him out on first down. it just concerns me a bit. I had some real pause the more I watched. Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking for things that impressed me. I was just thinking, look, is there anything that's going to make me it easier for me to sift you in this top three?
Yep.
Yeah.
No, of course. I guess it comes down to a question, and I prefer defensive players that make plays. And I don't know if this is me being driven by how bad the Jets have been at having playmakers, probably since Darrell Revis.
Mm.
Even our good defensive players are like D tackles that eat up double teams on the run. Like a defensive edge, but like 3-4 defensive edge that just do their job. Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, Leonard Williams, Quinnen Williams. Like, we've not had.
But Bailey would make sense.
Sorry?
But Bailey would make sense in that context, wouldn't he?
Yeah. And that's why I'm probably higher on. I just like guys that make plays. And I don't. And I'm probably driven that much by watching teams that. A lot of times I've watched the Jets run. The opponents run for a yard. The opponent's quarterback gets sacked for 2 yards.
Mm.
Then they make a play on third down. Third and 12, and they make the play. Third and 9, make the play. Third and 8, make the play. Because we're not good guys that can get you off the field and get a 6 yard sack or force a fumble or turn the ball over. We had a full year last year without turning the ball over. Without getting an interception, sorry. So I went very high on playmakers. So I think Bailey is the best playmaker out of the three from the edge position.
He had the second most pressures of the class as well. He had 80 pressures, which is nothing to be sniffed at. 14 and a half sacks is really good. You know,
one thing he did have going for him compared to the other guys, especially his level of competition was probably a drop down.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so, but you can only play the guys that are in front of you. Yeah.
What he was good, though, he was very good against Utah. And Utah had a couple of tackles that likely go in the first. Probably both go in the first, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I don't know if much has changed recently. When we're doing our own stuff, I try and avoid the big boards of everyone else right now. Because you end up doubting yourself too much and changing and whatever. But the last time I kind of looked at it, he was still down as a first, both of them at Utah. So, no, I just think he's a playmaker and lining up at the edge, let him pin his ear back. And I think in his rookie year, I wouldn't be surprised if he hits double digit sacks.
Mm.
I think he probably ends up somewhere in the 7-8 range, which would be really good. But I could see him hitting the double figures. If you told me one of these three hit double-figure sacks next year, it would be him, for me.
It's plausible. In terms of, like, there are certain situations in the top eight where if he went, I'm convinced he would.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I am with him. But I get that the other two have higher floors for their weaknesses, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, Reese, your number two, my number three. But again, my number one overall player here. I don't think he's going to be an edge rusher.
What makes you say that?
I think people think he's Micah Parsons light. And I think he's Micah Parsons, to me, is an edge rusher that can play linebacker. I think Reese is a linebacker that can rush the passer from the edge. I don't think he's quite got the explosiveness. I don't think he's quite got the pass rush technique to be an out and out edge rusher. Not that he can't be. But I think what you lose with how good he is at linebacker isn't worth what you get as an edge rusher. Whereas I think if you could line up, for me, what I think he's going to be is he's going to line up at linebacker. Well, this is what I would use him. Yeah. Different teams will see it differently. Line him up as a linebacker on third and long, get him to the edge or get him blitzing.
Is
where I think he'd be at his best, which is why he's a pure edge, he's a bit further down, but as an overall player, he's the number one player in the class for me. He's who I want the Jets to take it to, so this isn't a knock on him. I want the Jets to take him at number two overall.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be annoyed if they did and they lined him up as an out-and-out edge rusher. I think you lose too much. And I think what happens is a lot of people think linebacker's not an important position because they never go really high. They never go really high because it's so hard to predict a linebacker because so much of it is mental. But that floor's not as bad because while he's figuring out the linebacker position mentally, you can have him rush the passer. That's almost what you do early while he learns the defense and whatnot. Mm. And you can let him pin his ear back and go. I think he's good enough to be a first round pick at edge. I just think his overall talent is mitigated if you line him up as an out-and-out edge guy.
I would say, so, and this is the reason he's 1B, the edge stuff is a projection.
Yeah.
So he didn't have that many snaps where he actually rushed the passer.
His technique as an edge rusher isn't actually great right now.
It's not, nor is his pass rush win rate 14%, which is like 108th in the class.
Yeah.
But you can absolutely see that what's there is absolutely the one thing that he shares with Micah Parsons, okay, is, you know, when we talk about Devontae Smith, and you think about how strong he is for someone who is absolutely not 175 pounds at his playing weight. He plays at 160 tops. But you think about how strong a Devontae Smith is at 160. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
He's that strong at 240. The strength and explosive power that he generates from 240 pounds of body weight is exceptional.
Yeah.
And it's the main way that he wins. He's explosive and powerful. And as a raw base for someone who rushes the passer, he has the raw materials are a 9 out of 10. But because he has had relatively little development as an edge rusher, he has a pass rusher win rate of 14%. He only actually has 3 sacks.
Yeah.
And it's like, but you can see it. You can absolutely see it in the same way that you could probably, if you look back, kind of see it with Michael Parsons. Because when Michael Parsons moved to edge rusher, everyone was very much like, really? A 240-pound linebacker at edge? That's not going to work. But it works because he has pound for pound exceptional strength and power,
yeah.
Which Arvell Reese also has. They're similar types of player. I don't think he's quite what Parsons is in terms of a strength profile, but he might just be a similar type of guy. He might develop into an edge rusher who is able to get double digit sacks. The absolute ceiling for him, though, I don't know what it is. It could be really, really quite high. It could be Micah. And that's what you're betting on.
Yeah.
And, you know.
So do you think he ends up an out and out edge rusher?
I think that.
But you draft
they
him.
Will.
Your team drafts him and you're the head coach. Or you're the DC. Where'd you line him up? What'd you do with him? What's your long-term plan?
We would have a conversation about if I ran the right type of defense, I would be wanting to use him as a movable chess piece.
Mm-hmm.
I would want him on obvious passing situations to be a movable chess piece, a movable blitzing chess piece, and a movable chess piece who, in potential blitz situations, would drop into coverage. Someone who on rushing downs could potentially be playing off ball linebacker for me and doing that in year one, while he also, in situationally, in third down packages, does line up on the edge for me. I'd want him to be a situational third down pass rusher in year one and playing mostly off ball linebacker and situational blitzer on other downs. And I would see how that goes, because that's kind of what happened with Parsons. So that roadmap's there. So and if that works in year one and you see enough growth in the sort of raw pass rush ability off the edge, then year two, I'm like, you're going to play 50, 60% of your snaps on the edge, son. And we're going to go from there.
No, fair. Yeah, I could see it. I just think, I think his other strengths are stronger. And if I was taking him, I think he's a linebacker first.
But if he's just an okay edge rusher and a pretty damn good off-ball linebacker, yeah, that's great too. That's really good too. Okay.
That's good. But the reason he's so high is because he is flexible. You don't need to pigeonhole him early.
Yeah, he's a tweener, but he isn't homeless.
Yeah, he's almost a bother rather than a tweener.
Exactly. There's room for growth as either. There's no reason to exclude him from being a Pro Bowl player at either position.
Here's a question for you. He makes a Pro Bowl in his second year.
Mm-hmm.
You know that for a fact. That's what you know for a fact.
Yeah.
What position do you think it's at?
As a pass rusher.
You think it's a pass rusher?
I think if he realises his ceiling as a pass rusher, it will be better than the ceiling he achieves as a linebacker. I think Sonny Styles' ceiling as a linebacker is higher because Sonny Styles has instant read and react ability that is rare. Arvell Reese's is very good. It is not where Styles is. Styles is also a better tackler.
I'm still baffled how that.
But I think Reese has better pass rush chops. Sorry?
I'm still baffled how that Ohio State team gave up any points.
You get your corners too. You need really, really good corners.
Yeah. Right. One left to talk about.
Yeah.
And the one we've got left to talk about is a teammate of someone we already have.
Yeah.
And is one we spoke about quite a lot.
Yeah.
Already. Not in this pod, but not in this specific pod, but on the pod in general. Ruben Bain Jr. The big knock on him is he has tiny arms. I think that is the big knock on him. Like, people can laugh in the background, but that is the knock on him. I think what's happened with Will Campbell, although in a different position, is will put some teams just off him. They won't touch him. He's what is he, bottom 1% or something like that? It is ridiculous.
He is first percentile arm length for edge players. Yeah. So the only in the last 25 years, the only player at edge with sub 32 inch arms to make a Pro Bowl is Melvin Ingram.
Yeah.
And he wasn't drafted in the first round.
No.
There's been no first round edge rusher drafted in the last 25 years with sub 32 inch arms by any team. So anyone taking him really high is breaking a precedent. Yes. Yep. That's absolutely true. So 31 7/8 inches. It's not like Peter Woods where it was sub 31.
Generally, the DT is not as big a deal.
At DT, it's not such a big deal. At edge, it is considered for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
The reality is that probably 15, 16, 17 teams took him straight off their board. Yep. as a first round player, it would have moved him down their boards 30, 40, 50 places.
Yep.
It's because that is, some teams have hard and fast, I am not going beyond this tolerance.
No, you only need one that doesn't care about it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it's the same conversation that we were having with Aaron Donald, which is how high do you draft a 290-pound interior defensive lineman? Really? How high do you draft them when they're that small, relatively small, and that relatively light? And that conversation was had about Aaron Donald.
The Devontae Smith one as well.
And Devontae Smith, how do you draft a guy who's 165 pounds soaking wet? Yep. How on earth is he going to survive in the NFL? So you then have to look at, is this issue the thing that limits them? And the answer with Devontae Smith at college was no, it doesn't. Because corners don't push Devontae Smith around at college because Devontae Smith eats corners on the outside for breakfast at Alabama. He was actually objectively the best wide receiver in the best wide receiver quartet in college football for over 20 years. He was there with Judy. He was there with Ruggs. He was there with the other guy, Jalen Waddle. Still the best, but he was the best wide receiver of all of those players on that team.
He won the Heisman.
And he won the Heisman.
And what's wild about the Heisman is, the Heisman is the best receiver out of those four.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ball to go around.
I know. And it's just. And then also, the thing about Aaron Donald was, yeah, he's short. Yeah, he's relatively light and relatively small. But you never, when you watched Aaron Donald's tape at Pitt, you never questioned his strength or his explosiveness or his ability to just make massive plays in both phases of the game. This is a guy who, as a collegiate prospect, was practically bench-pressing guards that weighed 60 pounds more than him. And by golly, it happened at the next level too.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at Ruben Bain, I didn't know Ruben Bain's proper arm length until the combine. There were rumors his arms were going to be quite short. No one expects him to be that short. But in a vacuum, watching Ruben Bain, not once do I think he must have short arms because people are, you know, keeping them off of him with their longer arms because they're not. Tackles who are bigger, stronger and longer than him, aren't keeping him out of their frame. They're surrendering to his violent hands that get inside theirs and shake them off their feet. Reuben Bain has the most violent and powerful hands of any player in this class. There's no DT, there's no edge player, that when they get their hands on someone, creates more of a physical backwards jolt on contact than Reuben Bain. There's no one that drives players backwards with more consistency than Reuben Bain. There's no one that knocks people over with more consistency than Reuben Bain. And there's nobody that plays with that strength profile like Reuben Bain does, that also has the first step explosiveness and bend that Reuben Bain has. The man is an absolute machine. He has every single thing that you need to be a good pass rusher at the next level. He has got the production. He's proven it year on year. He's gone progressively better. He is a good run defender. He is an excellent pass rusher. He holds up great. He can play inside. He can play out as a wide nine. He can play as a stand-up outside linebacker. He can play as a 3-4 defensive end. He's played snaps at nose and he's held up. And he has played against good tackles and beat them. And he consistently produces pressures and sacks. He produced the most pressures in college football this year of any player. He produced 83 pressures. Okay? And on true pass sets, he produced more pressure than any other player in college football. That's true pass sets. That's like pass sets where you know they're throwing, as opposed to neutral situations. So in situations where it was pin his ears back and run the passer, rush the passer, and he knew what was happening, he was winning more than anyone else. He's just the kind of player that, for his size, he is 270. He plays like he's 290. He's 6'3". He plays like he's 6'7". He just looks bigger, stronger, more powerful, more explosive, and just playing better than everyone on the field. There are weaknesses to his game, and I'm not blind to them. His biggest weakness comes from his biggest strength. He is so single-minded about driving people backwards off their feet and being disruptive and violent and collapsing a pocket himself on his own that he sometimes overruns things. He will end up 5 yards deep in the backfield, but it might be that the running back is already past him. Or it might be that the quarterback has actually stepped up past him. It occasionally happens. He takes himself out of plays by being overly powerful and overly aggressive. That's a problem I don't mind. I don't mind that. Because you're going to get me 80 pressures a season and you're going to collapse pockets at will. And I would take that top five any day of the week, regardless of whether he has T-Rex arms or not. He's also 21 and a half years old. There's room for more.
Yeah, but he's not going to grow any higher, is he? Or anything. His arms only getting longer.
If he gets out of the top 10, that's criminal. It's criminal.
I think he will.
I don't think that Steve Spagnuolo would let that happen. I don't think. I don't think Dan Quinn would let that happen. I don't think Dan Quinn would let it happen. I have a feeling that once you're out of the top five, you might have someone who either just does it or comes up for him. You know, if you think about it, you know, a team that's got a couple of second round picks,
yeah,
or a couple of third round picks wants to come up a few spots and go, do you know what? We're a good team. He'd make us a great team. Just come and get him. Because he won't fall past Kansas City unless someone else falls. I don't see him making it pass. I don't see him making it past the Cowboys. I don't. There's no way. And are you telling me that if he fell as far as 18, that Brian Flores wouldn't go, yes, please?
Well, the problem is, like, if any of these teams have GMs, I've just took them off the board.
I think there are probably 20 GMs that took them off their board for the first round. But I think there's probably maybe only one or two defensive coordinators that have.
Yeah.
I think there's probably 30 DCs in the NFL who would take him with their first round pick and be happy. I you can't tell me that Steve Spagnuolo wouldn't love that. You think about Ruben Vane and Chris Jones. You think about what that would look like. And you just think Mendoza's going to get killed. You know, Holmes is going to be thrilled.
No, makes sense.
Like, but if they don't go wide receiver, they're idiots. But yeah, well, if they don't go with the white one. But yeah, I think that Ruben Vane, for that reason, is my edge one, is that I can see it right away working. Right away.
Makes sense.
Mm.
I just think, as much as it didn't show up in tape, and it's not enough to take him out in the first round, what happened with Will Campbell terrifies me. I know that showed up a bit more in tape than it has. Mm. But when there's another couple of guys sitting there that are 98-99% of them, something that could derail something that much and historically has derailed it that much, I'm like, it's just not a risk I'm willing to take. Now, you then compare him to Falk or Mesidor, I'm like, the risk is worth it because I think he's that much better than them.
Mm.
But I think when you're splitting hairs between the top three, as much as in my opinion you are, I think is enough to knock them down. And that was kind of what my thinking was.
Even if he's not an edge rusher, though, if he packs on 20 more pounds and he's Maurice Hurst, a souped-up Maurice Hurst, what we thought Maurice Hurst would be, a really good 5 or 3 technique, that's possible for him. We've seen snaps of him doing that really well. Again, it's like, if he kicks inside and he's an 8-9 sack a year guy who is an amazing run defender, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know? But I
don't see him panning out.
Yeah.
He'll be a productive NFL player for a long time.
I think it wouldn't surprise me if the median outcome for him is Brandon Graham.
Okay.
The median outcome.
Yeah.
I think the ceiling would be that he is a top 3 or 4 edge rusher every year. Like,
no,
a tick below Khalil Mack. They're similar.
You take that.
In how they win, they're similar.
You take that 3 overall.
Of course you would.
Right. Anyone else you want to talk about that we didn't, or a bit more information you want to go in on?
Just to say that the most interesting edge rusher that isn't on this list is R. Mason Thomas, and I found him fascinating. And I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't make some noise next year as a situational pass rusher in a good defense. If he went somewhere like Seattle,
he might give him
5 or 6 sacks. Interesting player.
We'll make sure and note that down in case you're right.
In case, yeah. I was right about Puka Nacua.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway,
that he was good or crazy?
No, that he was good. I didn't know that he was a nutter. Honestly, I didn't. I was right about Harold Fannin. I told you so, dance about Harold Fannin.
Who were you wrong about?
Oh, God, I've been wrong about so many people. Nathan Peterman, I was wrong. I was very, very wrong.
I thought Josh Rosen was better than Josh Allen.
I was very wrong about Josh Rosen. I was very wrong about Josh Allen. Yeah. I was quite wrong about Patrick Mahomes.
I was quite high on Mahomes. I was very wrong about Lamar. I didn't think he could go as a running back, but I didn't see this.
I found it easier to be high on Lamar than I did on Pat Mahomes, because I thought that it was Cliff Kingsbury's offense giving Pat Mahomes the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't realize was it was just that Pat Mahomes was so much better than everybody else on the field on any given day. that it was just him.
Yeah.
So, no. You know, and it never occurred to me that that could possibly be the case, and I'm an idiot. I'd like to apologise publicly to Pat Mahomes.
I'm sure it frustrates him to this day.
Because he is, and I can now absolutely say this, I've never seen a more genuinely jaw-droppingly good quarterback in my life. The closest I've come to jaw-dropping that much is Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
And before that,
Dan.
Nothing.
Dan Marino.
Dan Marino's arm would make my jaw drop. John Elway's ability to throw on the move would make my jaw drop. Brett Favre would occasionally make my jaw drop, and Warren Moon would just make me sigh romantically every time he completed a 60-yard deep ball. But Mahomes is probably the most talented thrower I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Mahomes is the best I've ever seen. So close.
Yeah. He is absolutely exceptional in ways that just blow my mind.
And on that note, we are doing quarterbacks next week.
We are.
Is that right? Are we not? Is that not what we said?
Yeah, we'll do quarterbacks next week.
Quarterbacks and tight ends.
Yeah.
I think that's what we said, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Two groups that there's not too many of this year. It's going to be tough on these quarterbacks. I still don't know who my QB2 is yet.
I don't think anybody does.
Well, I think most people have it quite set, QB1 and QB2.
I don't.
It's looking like QB2 is going to go in the first round, which is nuts to me. But we talk about that.
There are rumours swirling that my QB2, who is most people's QB3, is going to go top 10. There's rumours that someone's going to take a punt on Mr. Nussmeier.
Really?
There are rumours swirling that there is someone in the top. There are two teams in the top 10 interested.
Wow.
And all it takes is for one to believe just enough that the other's going to take them that they'll pull the trigger. Which would be hilarious.
That would really shake up the draft in a good way.
It would be insane because someone would get a gift and someone would. But, you know, I think it's most people's number two is not my number two.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
On that note, catch you next week. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. James, enjoy your weekend.
I'll try. Easter. It's going to be great.
Eat a lot of chocolate.
Oh, I
know. Catch you later.
Yeah, totally.
Bye.
Bye.